Where's your sheet of questions?
I know. Now I'm just going to shoot you tons of questions. Dun, dun, dun. Because now you know that I do know your history. So
yeah. Well, that always makes it easier.
Mm-hmm. Does it though? Does it being stuck with someone that doesn't know anything about you?
Yes, because then all the work is on you. You know what? If you know something about someone, you ask more intelligent questions than if you don't. Then otherwise, it's like, how so? What comes first, the music or the lyrics?
You're like, ugh. Well, I guess I'll start off. So welcome. Thank you so much for coming. I really, really do appreciate it. Being a huge fan of both Galaxy 500 and Luna. So it's definitely really nice to have you guys here. I figured I'd just do it on a whim. I wasn't expecting you to say yes. So I was like, oh my God, they said yes.
We generally say yes. We're trying to say no more often though. But not to you.
I'm glad.
Not to WFMU.
Well, I guess I'll start off with, we'll kind of go backwards in timeline, but backwards, but then kind of current in the sense that, Dean, you're doing a Galaxy 500 music. What spawned that? What made you decide to?
Well, you know what? There was this club in Atlanta that was sort of emailing us for a while. Speaking of people asking you to do things and you're like, no, I don't do that. No. And then they were like, come down, just do the whole of On Fire. And I was like, no, I don't want to do that. And then the Spanish promoter booked us and saw us do a few Galaxy 500 songs. He's like, when you come back and do like a whole set of Galaxy 500. And I was like, okay, we'll do it. He said, do one set of Dean and Britta, one of all Galaxy 500. So that's we did the show and it sounded really good and it was fun. And then that was in January. And then all the records were re-released a couple months later. Right. And the guys from Atlanta got back in touch with us again. And I thought, well, you know what? It's kind of a good time 20 years later to play the songs again.
And are you playing just all or just a specific album or?
Songs from all three albums and maybe a couple from the, a couple of outtakes, a couple of things we never played as well. But yeah, no, not just one album.
Because that seems to be the trend as of late. You know, everyone's like, oh, I'm going to play this from start to finish. And that is the show. And
I didn't know who came up with that concept, but it's done well, hasn't it? It's ATP always do that, right? The Don't Look Back, is that what it's called? The night where you have everyone, like the Stooges are doing.
Oh,
yeah.
Raw we Power this
raw
time.
Power. Mm-hmm.
You don't want to do that? Sounds kind of fun.
Like, all I have to remember is one album worth of music.
That's true. It is short, to the new, and I'm going to do the 45 minutes. But it's a challenge because I think often with one album, there are like three songs that are kind of really hard to play live or never worked live that you're just like, let's not do this. It was good in the studio, but it's not. But
especially with Galaxy 500 songs.
Yeah, so that would be a challenge.
Very ethereal sounds and, as they called, shoegazer, you know.
Yes.
No, we were kind of
pre-shoegazing.
I don't know if we were pre-shoegazing. We were running alongside of it. Certainly, we were not listening to the shoegaze bands. I don't think. Britta was in a shoegaze band, Bell Tower.
I was in a shoegaze band in 1990, living in England.
But we were around the same time. There was like Lush and Chapter House, all those things that we didn't listen to. And My Bloody Valentine didn't listen to them till. 1992, I think. No, I didn't. Well, I was barely aware. The only band I listened to, English band to listen to a lot, was the Spaceman 3.
Which kind of shows.
They're not shoegaze either. They have a much more sort of concrete, you can hear what instrument's doing what.
Yeah.
Actually, Scott was just mentioning while you were playing the first song, he was like, it's very Spaceman 3. Oh, no, sorry, the second song, very Spaceman 3. So you see the influences.
Yeah.
Well, that actually, Cheval Sombre, the record, we released it on our label, but it was produced by Sonic Boom of Spaceman 3, who plays on it, and we play on it, so it is related.
Yeah, even the Spaceman, I don't think I picked that up till after, maybe, I guess it probably about, we were around about the same time, maybe they existed like a year before Galaxy 500 did. I don't think I picked that up till after our first album. Then I started listening to them. I like the cover of the Perfect Prescription. These two kind of, they look very nerdy on the cover.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Not nerdy bad.
Nerdy druggy. like
I'm
the feelies. Yeah, I'm gonna pick this up.
That's great. Nerdy druggy. That's up my alley. So starting on doing all this and having to relearn your songs that you already knew, are the lyrics still, obviously, they're still trying to come back to you.
Yes.
But you've always had strange lyrics in Galaxy 500 songs anyways.
That's strange. Usually there aren't a whole lot of them, and sometimes it's just a repeated.
Except for the song Strange, you know, that was a very.
That's pretty wordy. That's probably one of the wordier ones. I'll get them. I'll get the lyrics down. You know, like the Kinks used to go on tour. Ray Davies would forget the lyrics to all his old songs. Teleprompter. Usually I keep thinking I'm forgetting them, and when I forget them, I'm going to forget them, and then they pop right into your head right before you have to sing them.
You can't think about things like that, or you forget.
I saw Nick Cave, and he did Babe, I'm on Fire, which is 15 minutes long song, and he had the words on
a teleprompter,
board. Not a teleprompter, a like someone came out and they were just flinging the pieces of cardboard to the side so he could just go down and go down. About 15 minutes long of a song.
I can see that with a long wordy song.
Yeah.
I have no excuse with the Galaxy 500 songs where it's just like, I just want to be your tugboat captain.
It's been a long time.
Yes, that's true.
We'll give you that. And then as for the Andy Warhol screen test, what made you decide to jump into that?
We got asked again. We got asked by the Warhol Museum and Pittsburgh Cultural Trust. They came up with this project of taking these old Andy Warhol films, short silent films called the Screen Tests, and there are over 400 of them. They reach 4 minutes long, which kind of suggests a song, like the kind of the perfect length for a song. So we got asked to write or do covers or whatever we wanted to do, really, but come up with piece with music for 13 of them and perform it live on stage while the film's played above our head. And we've been doing that show at museums and other fancy places.
Art festivals.
We've been doing it for almost 2 years. We're about at the 50th show. And it kind of took over our lives in a way that we had not expected. We thought there'd be, well, the people at the museum thought there'd be about maybe 10 shows. They thought, you know, you'll do it in Pittsburgh and there'll be some others. But it's still going. And the show we're playing during CMJ this year at NYU's Skirball Center. That will be the 50th show. So.
What was the question?
We have all these. We put out a CD of it. The DVD came out last year. And
we just released the CD.
And
is it Brita, straight from Brita one of the shows?
Most of it.
Is it what?
Is it straight from one of the shows, or is it?
No, we
just
you
went to the studio.
We recorded
it
right after. I mean, pretty soon. When did we record it? Right before the first show.
Yes.
Because there was talk of a DVD, so we had to rush into the studio and do it all in a day or two. And I mixed about half of it and some other people. Who else mixed it? Jason Marcucci and some others.
Britta's the engineer at home. I'm kind of helpless with this stuff.
So that's why she knew how to plug everything in. And
yeah, well, she's... I can plug things in. But I have very low tolerance for learning software. Whenever I find myself doing it, I'm like, damn it, I should be writing a song with words. Not learning how to tweak these things.
That's, you know, I enjoy it. So, you know, I don't think if it's not fun, then it's not really worth learning.
It's the curse of the modern world, isn't it? We're all forced to learn software that we'd rather not, or else fall behind.
Very true. Very, very true. Now, Britta, I have a couple bits of gossip that I found out on you.
Ooh, what?
So, yeah, well, it's not that difficult to find information, though. That's the sad thing. But so you were in GEM, huh?
Yes.
How did that happen?
Let's see. Shortly after I moved to New York,
Do you have to explain what gem is? Everyone just gem.
Knows. I don't know.
Everyone
knows. I feel like everyone should
know.
If they're really young, they won't know. No.
I'm too old to have known, yeah. I think.
Me too. but it's 80s cartoon about the girl rock band. I haven't watched it that much.
I haven't watched it. It was so long ago that I've seen it.
Yeah.
I can't even... I just remember Jem changed forms.
It's very 80s, yes. She went from Jerrica Benton to Jem with some holographic computer.
Her earring or something did something.
So she had two personalities.
And did she fight crime?
No, she ran an orphanage.
An orphanage?
Yeah, that's Jerrica right. did. And then Jem just had this glamorous...
But then she was also against nightlife. The Misfits.
Oh, right. The Misfits were the bad girl band. And I did the singing voice for Jem. And it came about because my dad did, he played on commercial jingles and knew the woman who, they were looking for somebody who wasn't, like a jingle singer, somebody young. And he got me an audition. So.
And there started your whole career, all based off of Jem. Yeah. And then you go and do Satisfaction.
Yeah, it's like a... theme there, yeah. And that was, my manager at the time said, oh, you should do some acting, and he lied to an agent and said I was an actress, and the first thing they sent me out for was Satisfaction. Luck, again. Good.
You're still hanging out with Julia Roberts and Justine Bateman. And
all the time.
Yeah. I made out with Justine Bateman.
That's true.
Not to swing it back to me.
Yeah.
We were both in a movie with her.
And the only two movies she's ever been in, I'm
pretty
sure.
Who else can say that?
Yeah, I didn't make out with her.
You didn't know, I see.
I didn't make out with anybody in Satisfaction. I'm the only one. I had a dog and a drug problem.
And
yes,
an overdose.
You were the druggie.
Yeah.
My brother found it and DVR'd it for me because I had never seen it.
Oh,
and I only think I saw about 10 minutes of it because it was
terrible.
Just awful.
It's terrible. The music's really, really terrible.
But we were laughing. We were like, oh my God, that's not her. Yeah. It is. That's not her, but it is.
It's amazing that that film's got so many talented people involved with it.
Right.
Liam Neeson. Deborah Harry.
She's
in it.
Really?
Steve Cropper.
Steve Cropper did the music
he
for it.
He did the music, yeah. And
but
he's
it was
in
it. It's the 80s.
Yeah.
And Trini Alvarado, she was a good actress. Scott Coffey, yeah.
So that was your first encounter with Britta Danner.
Satisfaction. I had not seen Satisfaction.
I think I made you watch it.
When did it come out?
After we met. It came out in 88.
In 88.
Yes.
Right after or during your family time.
I was
thing.
25. I was not the target audience for that either, I don't think. Was I?
No, you definitely weren't.
I was popular with my brother was 5 at the time.
Right.
I was very popular with his little friends.
Really?
Who now are all 30, I guess. Right.
So I don't think, even then I just remember going, no, I'm not watching that one. Uh-huh.
I'm going to Gem Con next month.
No way.
Yeah.
There is such a thing?
Yeah, apparently. I got invited. I'm going to go.
Are you going to sing?
I don't know about that. I don't know.
My God, do you know Gem songs still?
No. No. I could probably sing the theme song. I don't know. As long as nobody films it on their iPhone. Puts it on YouTube.
Well, this is the kind of thing you'll be it's sign photos.
Yeah, sign
so
photos.
So maybe for each person, you'll be like, okay, give me another, for an extra $10, I'll sing 15 seconds.
Theme in your ear.
That's how those things go. That's all about.
And someone's going to convince you somehow to go on tour doing an entire, all the Gem songs.
Oh, yeah, people have asked that a lot. I wouldn't do that.
I don't know. That's how you got the Andy Warhol thing, people asking you to do it,
right.
The Galaxy 500, you never know. It might just come down to it.
You know what we did last year? We did the show Yo Gabba Gabba. I don't know if you know that again. Mm-hmm. You're not the target audience.
Cool,
that's for little kids. It's a really cool kids show.
It's really cool. It's very 70s.
And they have a lot of good musical guests on it. And they had us also. And we like paddled in a fake paddle boat and rode on a tandem bicycle.
Yeah, they wrote this song called "Let's Ride," And we're riding on bicycles in the sky. It's really trippy. And riding and rowing boats in the sky. It's on our website. I told our webmaster to put it on our website.
What does your son think of it?
It's on our iPhone app.
He thinks that's pretty uncool.
He's 11. Not cool. He's past him.
What does he think is cool?
Oh,
right
I haven't
now?
Showed him that. What does he think is cool right now?
Yeah, he's 11. He just
not
turned
11. Not us. I don't know.
I don't know.
No,
he's
kidding.
He still thinks we're cool because he's only 11.
Until he turns 13 and then he just hates everybody.
He's teaching us how to use the iPhone. It's good.
Aw, see, it comes back around.
Yeah.
And then for Luna, which has, I feel like it's been forever, but it hasn't, but it has in my little brain. It feels like it's been forever.
Since we broke up?
Yeah.
It's been 5 years?
Yeah, it's been 5 years. It's getting on.
Do you see, and you still see the guys? And
Well, Lee Sean? Lives in L.A. Sean, we saw him about a month ago.
We saw him at a party.
Yeah. He was playing, and we walked in, and we're just like, that sounds like Sean. And I was like, no, I don't see him over there, but it was him.
Yeah.
He has
you can always tell his playing style.
Definite sound. But
yeah, it's a very specific sound to him.
Yeah, we just recommended Sean for a job. I hope he gets it. And, I mean, Lee, the musical job.
Lee, we don't see unless we go to L.A. because he moved there immediately after Luna broke up, and he writes songs for television and some commercials, right?
Yep, and Stanley he sent me a birthday message, and I said, "Our birthday is I'm on the 1st of August. He's on the 2nd."
So
he's, you know, the Feelies are back together again.
I know.
So he's
they played a couple shows
kind of
Hoboken
at age 50 has resumed his musical career. And
but yeah, I know that great. He won't tour. That's
I think
smart.
I
that's
think
smart.
You think so?
He might. Well, his kids is
now that they're grown up.
Kids, I don't know if they're both out of the house, but once they're both out of the house, it's easy for him to tour. But I think Bill from the Feelies, I think he still lives in Florida, so I think it's maybe harder for him to tour, but.
Did you see the show? We saw the show.
I missed it. I forget so what good. Happened. I remember being like, oh, I'm not around for it. I probably was working with my luck.
They're great. It's the really shows are great. You know, I saw a couple of them last year. And
yeah.
They always were an amazing live band. And
yeah, they have such a great sound to them.
Yeah.
And it's great to hear that they're still sounding good and up to par to their old stuff. But they reissued all their CDs as well just recently. So...
Yes, they did. I used to see them all. I was like a deadhead for the Feelies. I'd see them all the time.
Wow, who knew the Feelies had a deadhead?
Oh, they did. They had like a. They had. I mean, because they were kind of big. They would play at the Ritz, and there'd be a lot of like preppy guys in bandanas, kind of guys who liked the dip one.
Preppy guys in bandanas.
Well, yes, some preppy guys would wear bandanas on their heads
really?
Sometimes.
I don't remember that.
Well,
bring it back.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you go to prep school and you like the Dead.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Okay. Yes, they're not like
you don't want to. You don't want to commit to the drug rugs and the and the tie dyes.
Right.
So that's the way you're gonna kind of.
Maybe I'm mixing it up.
Yeah.
Prep school guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I understand.
So with Luna stuff, do you still tinker with it at all, or is it just completely gone?
Do we ever play the songs, Shemaine? Mm-hmm. We usually play, we play one or two. Like when we do a Dean and Britta set, we'll play a Luna song or two, and then a couple of Galaxy songs. And
there's certain songs we don't want to play, I guess. The ones that are
The ones that
Sean
depend
heavy.
On, like, yeah. Where I would have to, It's hard to do the Luna stuff, because... It was more about the twin guitars. Guitar and
right.
Specifically about his guitar sound, and so it would be hard to go and do a whole set of that stuff without
that
him
sound.
There. That would be hard to imagine.
Yeah, but we have a handful. We do.
And then during Luna, you guys did your own album, Sonic Souvenirs, and everything in La Ventura. And then you had the one album come out since. Are you just so busy that you haven't even thought of doing?
Yeah.
Well,
I guess we really have been busy with this Warhol thing, and so that and this new CD with the Warhol stuff has got a bonus disc of remixes. It took a long time,
but
especially because we put it out on our own label and next extra work.
And then actually we also put a couple of other artists out on our label, so that
It
took some time. Cheval Sombra.
Yes, you. It's only when you start when you start putting out records, you realize how much a label does, even in the label, how much work there is that goes into it, and you kind of appreciate what those people do more, I think.
Newfound respect.
Yeah, but I mean, we have a lot of half finished things sitting around. We'll get there eventually. But it's not. It's not. It's. I feel like things have changed. I'm not in a hurry to make records anymore. We're not on this treadmill.
Right.
Of like in Luna, we had a multi-album deal, and it was kind of like, okay, we need to make another record to get in advance so that everyone can make a little money, so that we can go tour again. And
there's no more advance money.
Right.
That's a thing of the past.
Yeah.
And even, you know, making money selling CDs is sort of, I don't know.
That's hard to.
Kind of.
So you make a record when you're gone. Ready to do it, hopefully.
Yeah, which is great, because I like kind of taking the, get like you're saying, getting off that money treadmill.
And I know you were saying, you know, in your book, you could definitely tell, you know, that you're frustrated when you're with Luna about the, you know, like, why aren't we getting picked up? Why is this not happening?
Right.
And it was always bad timing, it always seemed. It was just like, right when, because I remember when Penthouse came out.
Right.
And I was in love. I was, it was wonderful. I just was, it was a cloud nine. That was Chicago. Like, I know exactly where I was.
Right.
I know everything. You know, I'm biking around. Like, that was my soundtrack. And then it was funny because I think that was like your peak.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, grunge.
Right.
Well, and all that hit you.
Grunge was already happening.
It was already happening, but I think it kind of overpowered at that point. And then Kurt Cobain probably died by that point.
Right.
And that kind of overtook, and then just became really bad.
That's true. But so, I mean, I look back, you look at the time, you just look at what's playing on radio and look at the Luna stuff, and like, we weren't really in, you know, part of the zeitgeist or whatever. It's not really a surprise that Moon Palace didn't get played on the radio, and instead it's, you know, Smashing Pumpkins and Stone Temple Pilots and Cranberries. I don't know. It became a really huge business.
Right.
Modern rock radio in a way that it hadn't been earlier.
Yeah. Alternative became popular.
Yes. And then it becomes even more difficult to get into those playlists.
Right.
The bigger the money is. And these radio stations are doing their analysis of, and you know, and testing people, playing them 20 seconds and finding out, okay, do you like this? Do you like this? It's science there, and it's science and it's business, and they're in the business of delivering young minds to the advertisers, right? That
well,
is what
sadly.
It is.
Well, now
that's the product.
The way bands make money is licensing for commercials.
Yeah, which is
TV and film.
My husband and I were having a conversation about that recently, about the album The Who Sells Out, and then the fact that it was this parody of that exact thing, and then they did.
What did they do?
Well, I mean, you always hear a Who song in an ad, you know, and it just became, it did become that.
You know, it used to be a source of great contention within The Who that because Townsend, who owns the writing credit on most of the songs,
right,
that he would allow people to use the song, but not the Who's recording of it.
Oh.
And so he would make money because there's always got to pay the publishing
writing.
Side. And so he would always make money and the band would make nothing. And they fought over that. So I think finally now he's licensing the actual recordings and they're all getting paid.
Right.
So that's what's happening with the Galaxy 500 stuff, right?
That was Strange was just in a
Strange
in
was in a movie, in that movie Greenberg. Yes.
Yeah, that was good. But that's a cool thing to be in.
Yes, that's a good thing to be in. You know, Noah Baumbach, the director.
It's not a Chrysler commercial.
Yes, exactly. Noah, the director, had seen us do that at the Bowery Ballroom a couple of years ago.
Hero,
Strange.
Was
and it?
Oh, yeah, Bowery.
And it stuck in his head, I think, and got into the movie. There was a Galaxy 500 song in an Acura commercial.
Was it Acura or was it Nissan?
Mm.
But I do remember that.
Maybe you're right. Maybe it was Nissan. The instrumental.
Yeah.
Oh, that song.
Which is funny to me because it's so early and we could hardly play our instruments. And years later, it's in this commercial for this high-tech thing. With the
You're ahead of your time. You just didn't know. But I remember when that came out during that too, because I...
Did you get angry?
No, I was kind of in awe because they were using a lot of songs that I grew up with.
Right.
And I was like, they're so targeting me right now to buy their car. Yeah.
Right.
It was really strange. It just to see it actually happen in front of you. You're like, oh, that's me. You want me because I know that song and right. I know all the songs you're using in all your commercials. I didn't buy one though. It didn't work.
I think it's
maybe it's more that someone with your tastes got that job of placing things.
Well,
in
that's
ads,
the thing.
That was
all these
was about
people
to say
in
that.
Advertising are young and hip, and I don't know. I think it would be great to live in a world where everything sounded good.
Yeah.
I don't care. I still won't buy the products, but if I want it to sound and look good.
You know, I think the truth about TV ads, like, it's not my favorite thing to put a song in a TV commercial, believe me. But I think it got to the point where there was better music in the commercials on TV than there was on the radio.
Mm.
More adventurous. That they were more adventurous in what they would allow. They were really, like,
and
they would
better,
push, like
than music videos.
Like
too,
techno and stuff like that. Yeah. They were into that.
Techno sells.
Techno.
It's very Warholian.
Bringing it all back around.
Yeah.
It is funny to see how that has changed and is. But I do remember hearing that come out. But I, being a huge Galaxy 500 fan, and you did say that people from Boston never appreciated Galaxy 500.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
But I know
you
a
did.
I did.
You know,
I did.
I mean, not that none did, but it's just what, you know, we weren't nearly as popular as other bands. Even the Pixies weren't that big. They were much bigger in France than they were in Boston.
Yeah,
England.
I was always kind of amazed when I left and went off to college and people knew who the Pixies were. I thought it was in such a local scene with the bands that were coming out of Boston. So,
but it's better to be underappreciated in your hometown and get bigger everywhere else than be like a huge local draw in your hometown
and nowhere else
do they care.
When I moved to London, that's when I discovered the Pixies and Galaxy.
Yeah,
the
Pixies are much bigger there.
Yeah.
No, I definitely loved going to shows and seeing all the shows. Like I said to you earlier, that I saw you guys open up for the Cocteau Twins, and I followed your history for a good while. And even the radio station up in Boston, WFNX, actually played Galaxy 500. And they
did they?
They
what?
Did.
You must be listening on Sunday night at
yeah,
like
Boston
2 in
rocks.
The morning.
No, but they actually did. And that was when that station was good.
Right.
And they did play good music. And they did support local music, too.
Well, and obviously the college stations in Boston were great. You know, WMBR and WHRB. And they all had this thing where you could give them a cassette, so you could sort of build your following in Boston by having your cassette being played on college radio, and I don't know if that really existed. It certainly didn't exist in New York, so I think in a way it was easier there.
It's interesting. I went to so many shows, you know, from all the Boston bands, like the Cave Dogs and Tribe and everything.
Right.
So, you know, I've seen a lot.
I played with both of those bands.
I know one of the Cave Dogs.
Yes, Mark from the Cave Dogs.
Mark Rivers.
Does the music for...
Because I do voices for some Adult Swim shows.
Uh-huh.
Moral Oral. And most recently, Mary Shelley's Frankenhole. And
nice.
Some character
these are puppet
voices.
Shows.
Yes, they're stop animation, and Mark Rivers does all the music for that.
Oh, really?
The drummer
he's still
the Cave
existing.
Dogs. Yes.
That's great. I know the... some of the members from Tribe went off and they were doing stuff with for Guitar Hero Rock Band. They had, and there's a Tribe song in it too, which I thought was really funny. My brother pointed out, he's like, "You won't believe it. There's
were
a
they
Tribe
good
song
Tribe?
In here.
I can't remember.
What?
Were they good Tribe?
Yeah, Tribe.
Do you like
was
them?
Good. I
they?
Like Tribe.
Okay,
Tribe was good. You'd like Tribe.
I can't remember. I know we played with them, but
they had kind of an edge to it, but they had a good sound.
Right.
But yeah, and then O Positive, and there was a lot of good bands that kind of came out around that time. But Galaxy 500, without a doubt, had a sound of their own. So it was a nice change of pace. It was kind of in the realm of like the 4AD stuff that I started to right. listen to. So it kind of picked up.
Whereas, yeah, most of what was coming out of Boston was more like, well, there was a lot of big thrash scene, obviously, and then like sort of a fusion yeah. of punk and metal.
Yes.
It was grunge, and it wasn't called grunge yet.
Right.
But, you know, I really think like grunge was all over the country. It was not invented in Seattle, but no. it's just Sub Pop came along. And I think they had
better.
A great look, and yet they did it better. And but the label, you know, it was like a good label with like fantastic designers. And I always think that
yeah, we just didn't have the flannels and
yes,
stuff.
Yes, that's true.
Maybe if Boston was a little more fashionable in that end of it, we could have taken it over. But I'm glad we didn't. I wasn't into that whole scene,
right?
Obviously. So are you now, when you go and do the Bowery show, then you're going to go travel all over the world, it seems.
Well,
what's the furthest
you're going
now?
We're doing about 10 of these shows. Dean Wareham plays Galaxy 500. I think 10, is that right? I think so.
I don't know.
Eight in the States, and then at the ATP festival.
The Bowley 2.
Yes, Bowley Weekender number 2, curated by Bell and Sebastian. We're doing that, and one show in London, and... That's it for now. Maybe we'll keep doing it. I don't know.
We might go back to Australia. And
you can go visit your sister.
Yes.
Tel Aviv.
Out in the outback. Get an Aboriginal backing band.
Yeah. We did have a guy in Tel Aviv saying, do you want to come play here? So maybe we'll do that.
See, pretty much anybody can contact you and they can just get you. That's well, you all know what? It is.
People are always emailing. It's like, why don't you come here? And we're like, well, because... Nobody asked us.
We can't
to.
Usually just decide and go, we're yes. going there.
We wait for a serious offer from a promoter who's like, here, come here, and I can pay you this to cover your expenses. Yeah. And this. And it's like, okay.
I know my brother's bitter. You're not down in Baltimore. So, you know.
And someone was asking Boston. I was like, you know, if someone wants to book us,
would that yes. be weird?
We will come.
It's always weird going back to Boston.
Because you know,
I went to college there too. It's like going back to the old house, whatever. But I'm sure we'll probably get around to it.
It'd be weird to play the Galaxy 500 stuff up there, I would assume.
I don't know. No weirder than anything else. I didn't. It's like when you ask a ball player what it's like that they're playing against their former team or whatever. Now it would be. You know what? It'll be nice. It's you get like a. A surge of emotion, I think, going. I mean, I've played some of those old Galaxy songs in Boston, and it's fun.
Yeah.
It's a little strange, but...
Like the final Luna tour was fun.
Yes.
And watching that video, it was definitely an emotional... The video that you did for that was really good, I thought, tour.
Yes.
And I happen to have watched it right after reading your book. So it was just kind of a perfect
yeah,
companion.
Yeah, it goes well
so.
With the book. Matt, you know, yes. Matthew Bazell, the director, did a great job with that. And because he was just filming us for months. And I was like, how are you going to turn this into a movie? But he knew what he was doing. He'd been to film school. And I'd say, what are you doing? And he'd be like, I'm building story. And then later I saw that, yes, in fact, he had been building story. And it was a good moment. It's a good moment to make a film about a band right when they're about to break up because there's some tension there.
Oh, yeah.
But even just to see you
otherwise.
Riding in a van with the U-Haul carrying all your stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's just funny to think of. And I think it was definitely a good way for people to see how a band goes on the road. And, you know, I know I was surprised
right.
to see that. I thought that was really kind of shocking.
You thought we should be in a bus.
I totally did.
Some people think you're rich.
Yeah, it's true. Some people do think I'm really rich.
Some people think you have like some trust
yeah.
fund or something.
But it was, you know, you're touring like all my friends toured. So
right.
it was just kind of a strange thing. I was like, no, but I have lots of their albums. No,
right.
that doesn't go together.
We had a bus for some of that tour, I think.
Don't always have to hump the gear.
Yeah.
Just sometimes.
And then going to see you in Spain. Seems like Spain, you have a love for Spain, without a doubt.
We love Spain.
Yeah. You know what? You like the places where they like you.
True.
Yeah.
then you come to like cities where they don't like you. You're like, that's a stupid place.
Yeah. Where's that? What city?
Manchester.
I still like Montreal, but even though we never did
that's true.
That
I like
well
Montreal
there,
too.
And we still like it.
I love Montreal, so you know.
Yeah.
It's just got there's too many crusty punks. I think that's all it is.
We do better in Toronto.
Toronto is a great city. That's what I was saying.
Wow. See? So that's why.
I love Toronto.
Toronto, good. Montreal, not so much.
But, yeah, Spain's great because the food's great. The coffee's great. The people are in a good mood. They're fun. They're friendly. They're not cool. You know, they're hot.
Spain, you know, Spain, they kind of came to indie rock later than everywhere else. You know, it's just a lot. The long recovery from living under Franco, I think. And, you know, even the '80s, no one went there and played. Galaxy 500 never went there, nor did anyone ever ask us to go there. And then, but it's sort of in the '90s, it changed and it liberalized so quickly. And it
now
became,
they have the Primavera Festival.
Yes.
And
now they're just really into rock music.
They're making up for it
in a way that probably say Germany isn't. Well, you know,
we need to go back to Brazil. That's yes. On my list.
Like, I'm putting that on the agenda. Find a promoter.
I'm
going to
work it out.
If there's a promoter out there listening, we would like to go
there.
We'd
like to play in Londrina and Curitiba and yes. Sao Paulo.
We can tell you exactly where to put us up. And excellent. Well, good luck with your tours, your upcoming tours.
Thank you. Yes, we do have a lot of tours this fall. We're doing we're still doing the Warhol show a few times too. So.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be seeing you at the Bowery for the upcoming one.
Okay.
And I'll...
That's our first show.
I know. Nervous. You've got 2 weeks to get ready for
it. To get
it
together.
Lots of practice and getting over jet lag.
Oh, yeah. We'll be fine.
Are you doing any other shows in between, or is that it?
That's the first show, except for the secret show.
Right. There's a secret show.
But by the time this airs, no one's going to know about the secret show.
Okay yeah. The secret show was great. It was fantastic. It was much better than the Bowery Ballroom show.
I'm sorry for all of you that got tickets for the Bowery Ballroom show, but we were brilliant in the secret show. Definitely good luck with that. And then with the even the Andy Warhol ones when you come back around. Seems like you're doing a lot of the Andy Warhol ones in Europe.
Oh, yeah, yes. Germany and
that's
Warhol,
right. We're going to Dresden.
And Dresden.
And then back to Paris next year. Like I say, it just keeps going.
Yes.
Which is fine.
We need to go to Sweden next and China.
I have listeners from both areas, yes. So there you go.
There you go.
So there you go, everyone. Contact them. Obviously, they will respond.
Send me an email. I get the email.
Oh, there you go.
Website.
See, Britta will respond to you. She's nice.
Mm-hmm. She's
too nice. Too
I'm
nice.
Mean.
I'm the yes man. You're the no man.
You get the cranky fact.
No, why would I do that? No.
Dean.
Well, at some point, we'll have to say no and make another record.
There you go. And hopefully that'll be soon. I'm anxious to hear. Granted, not that what you have out isn't good, but I'm anxious to hear what you got.
I'm ready.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. It was fun.